So yesterday we talked about the climate change talks in Cancun. The notion of climate change is a movement that has grown from a few scientists speaking maybe a generation ago to being a mainstream movement involving 193 countries. Often social change is spark-plugged by some very unusual characters. And it occurs to us that the entire environmental movement began with some interesting, amateur, eccentric naturalists who began looking at the world maybe differently from the way humans had looked at it for most of civilization. It's chronicled in a fascinating book called The Species Seekers, Heroes, Fools, and the Mad Pursuit of Life on Earth. Richard Conniff joins us. He's the author of the book. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, John.
So this is a story of the amateur naturalists who went out in search of species that transformed our view of how biology works. Everything from Darwin to the notion of the threatened species all comes from a lot of very interesting and oddball characters. How did you come to this story?
Well, I've been writing about animals for the last 30 years for National Geographic and other magazines, so I spent a lot of time out in the field with people who were actually doing species-seeking work, and I can tell you they're crazy from firsthand experience. I was once out with a guy in Ecuador who we came to a flaming barricade, and he said, "I can take it," and we wouldn't let him, and it turned out there were seven more flaming barricades beyond that, so it was a good thing.
And this is all in the pursuit of a mushroom or a mosquito. Or
yeah, that guy was after a botany, you know? Not exactly a moving target.
Yet, as you describe in this book, these guys are all heroes.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They take tremendous risks, and they often do it for stuff that the rest of us consider trivial and laugh at a little bit. On the other hand, you know, one of those people was an American named Thomas Say, who traveled across the American West in 1819, very early, at considerable risk, and among Indians who were considered by others to be extremely hostile. And he was really interested in beetles and other insects. And he discovered a species of mosquito. And that species later turned out to be responsible for the malaria that then afflicted much of the eastern United States from the Gulf of Mexico up to the Great Lakes. So you know, a lot of people were sick and were dying because of that, and they no longer are because of his discovery.
Was it discoveries like that that demonstrated the power of these characters and transported them out of being mere eccentrics or hobbyists or adventurers in the old British mold?
Yeah. Well, so they wound up transforming all kinds of things about our view of the world and ourselves. So we didn't know when they started out that species could even go extinct. That happened at around 1900, or rather 1800, when we first realized that. And actually, Thomas Jefferson had something to do with it. He was obsessed with collecting mastodon specimens, or as he called them, mammoth specimens, because he wanted to prove that America had mighty, great, big, powerful beasts. And so he was involved in excavating the mastodon, and that was later used by a French anatomist to demonstrate that, you know, this creature was related to elephants but could no longer be living on the planet without having been detected. So that made extinction a fact of life.
Part of the attraction to this kind of science is that it's both cutting edge and you can do it at home. You can try this at home even if it is crazy. I mean, unlike nuclear physics, for instance.
Yeah, that's in fact true. You can discover a new species in your backyard. In fact, I was talking to ants are a good candidate. I was talking to a guy at Harvard at their museum there, and they've had two of the greatest ant biologists ever living or working there, including E.O. Wilson today.
Sure.
And this guy was in the front yard of the museum, and he looked down and he said, that ant has a shiny butt. That's not supposed to be like that. And he picked it up, and it was a new species. He collected it in a cigarette pack and brought it back to the lab, and it's now part of science.
I love that. You know, these characters do have a reputation, as passionate as they are, for being, you know, kind of backstabbing. Tell us about the Philadelphia's George Ord.
Yeah, he was from a wealthy family. And he was what was known then as a closet naturalist. That is, he did his work in the back rooms of museums. And he was, I think, envious of the people who were out in the field. And he sabotaged them. In particular, he sabotaged Thomas Say, who was sending back all of these great specimens. And when Say died prematurely, he delivered a terrible obituary or eulogy, just destroying him with faint praise. and then he let his entire collection rot without anybody studying it.
Oh, that's so sad. How did the amateur naturalists contribute to the coalescing into the theory of the origin of species of Darwin and the notion of evolution as we understand it today?
Well, so we think that's all Darwin, but in fact, Darwin himself credited a huge army of species seekers who had discovered all kinds of species that he used in forming his research. So, for instance, he did years and years of work on barnacles. They drove him mad. He hated them at times, but he was learning how to classify and how to understand the connections among species. And all of those barnacles were collected by other people, not by him. And that was true of every field of biology that he looked at. Pigeons were also important, domestic pigeons particularly. But, you know, even for domestic pigeons, he went to pigeon fanciers around England who were people who basically hung around in pubs and talked about their beloved pigeons.
Pigeon fanciers. Richard Conniff, you know, I'm imagining a giant sort of auditorium filled with all of these people as sort of introducing themselves and going, hey, what's your phylum? You know, to try to indicate what sort of species they love. If you were one of these guys, what would your phylum be?
Oh, I like insects. I don't know. They just have so many quirky parts that it's just fun to talk about how bizarre they can possibly get and how they got that way.
And it's also easy to find new insect species because there's zillions.
I found them in my yard.
So frogs are harder, right?
Frogs are harder and disappearing.
And mammals, of course, that's the holy grail right there.
Yeah, but, you know, even now we're discovering a new primate every year, so it's not over.
All right, Richard Conniff, author of The Species Seekers. Sounds like there's a sequel, Heroes, Fools, and the Mad Pursuit of Life on Earth. Thanks so much, Richard.
Thank you, John.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.